everybody. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And yes, it's me tonight. It's not a show from the archives. I've been gone. I've been halfway around the world and back. I've been gone about 9 weeks. And during that time, they were taking the shows from the archives. So I hope everybody was enjoying those. But now I'm back and I have to get back to work again and everything is really piled up. But I shouldn't have to go out of the country again until, well, out of the country until the middle of the year. I'm already booked all the way through 2008 and I will be making some more long trips. But I'm not going to be taking any trips in the States, especially during the winter. So it's going to be around February, I believe, before I go on the road again. So I should be back here every Friday unless something unexpected comes up. But it seems strange to be doing it after being gone, but I've been gone now 9 weeks. So tonight I want to talk about the trip and the things that happened on the trip and bring all that up to date because I don't have any guests. But there's been so much. So I want to start by talking about that. But let me first give out the toll-free number if anyone wants to call in and ask questions or anything. The toll-free number for the States is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. I don't have the one for overseas, but I found out when I was in Australia, New Zealand, people are listening to the show over there. So it is reaching worldwide audiences, so I think that's very good. And I know Don at BBS Radio would like to know that everywhere I went, people said they are listening to the shows. Okay. I really feel like I'm in a time warp. Because, like, I've been dropped down in the middle of all of this. Because I left the country, it was in September, and it was hot here. We were in the middle in Arkansas, and we were still wearing short sleeves and shorts. And now when I come back, here it is December. And in other parts of the world, you know, they don't celebrate the holidays that we do. So I just feel like a whole gap there in my life, and I've been dropped down in the middle of a time warp. Because in Australia, they were talking in October about Halloween, but they kept saying, oh, Halloween is an American holiday, and they don't really celebrate it over there. They said it was beginning to come into Sydney somewhat, but not the way we celebrate it. So to them, it wasn't, you know, over here we go all out on all these holidays and the stores and everything, and I just feel like something is missing. But over there was nothing about Halloween, and of course they don't celebrate Thanksgiving. So I went through all of that with the TV with nothing on it. And just when I was getting ready to come back, the end of November, they started with a few Christmas commercials on TV. And that was about it. So then I come back here, and we're smack dab in the middle of getting ready for Christmas. So I feel like I've lost a block of time. Okay. But especially over in Australia and New Zealand, they only have about 4 or 5 channels on TV. And only one of those where they have movies at night, and they have a few of our TV shows, you know, different programs that they'll have over there. But otherwise, there's not really that much to watch TV about. So I mostly just worked on my book and did the other jobs that I was sent over there to do. So I was kind of out of touch, I guess you would say, with America altogether. And Australia was in the middle of their election, and so that was mostly what they had on TV. But it was interesting to note, too, that they really don't do the publicity we do with our elections. Of course, they start them much later. And when I go over there, let's see, when I got to Australia, it was like the middle of October, and there were just very few commercials on TV about the candidates that they were running for the prime minister. And most of them were talking about wanting to get John Howard out and Rudd in, but not like over here where there's just constant bombardment of political commercials. You know, even now they're starting it over a year before there's even going to be an election. So it was rather refreshing to see that the rest of the world don't go all out as much as we do with these different things. But when I left, about the 20-something of September, I was going to New Zealand first, and I started out with the trip. I did a break in Tahiti, did an overnight break there. Normally, when I go that direction, I try to do an overnight break in Honolulu that breaks the trip up. This time, there was a lot of things on the internet trying to get people to do overnight stops in Tahiti. And I thought, well, that's a good idea, because the trip over, once you leave Los Angeles, is a good 14-hour flight if you go direct. And I've gotten past that, where I don't like to be on a plane that long. It's enough when you go to Europe and other places and you have to be on there for 10 hours. 8 to 10 hours is a long time. But I've gotten to where I really don't like the 14-hour flights anymore. And next year I'm supposed to go to China. They're talking about that, and that would even be further. It's going to be a 16-hour flight. I've got to figure out some way that I can stop in the middle of the ocean. Hell no, that's when I'm still working on that. But anyway, we decided this time we would stop in Tahiti, get a good night's sleep. Because when you fly from L.A., it's 8 hours to Tahiti, and then from there on to Auckland, New Zealand, it's only 5 hours. And believe me, that really makes a difference when you're sitting in a plane for that length of time, to just stop, get off the plane, get a good night's sleep, then you're ready to go again. And when you go through Honolulu, it's the other way around, 5 hours to Honolulu and then 8 hours on to Auckland or to Sydney. This time we were going into New Zealand first. So it was really helped to take that break. And when I go over that part of the world, I like to get in a couple of days before I'm going to have to do anything, because the jet lag will really hit you. And it usually hits you a day or so after you get there. I found that out the hard way when I've gone over there before. You think you're okay, but you're not. And when that jet lag hits, it really can wipe you out. And that's why I like to get in there a day or so ahead of time, and then I can have time for your body to adjust. You get down there, and you feel like you're upside down for a couple of hours, a couple of days. You're totally disoriented. And really, you are upside down because you're clear on another hemisphere. But the last time I went over there, I came into Sydney, and we came in at night, and I said, that's the best time to do it, because we got up the next morning feeling fine, and we said, well, this is the way to do it. We'll come in at night, and we can adjust a whole lot easier. Because on that trip, 5 years ago, was the last time I went over there, we went sightseeing the day after we got there to the Opera House and the Harbor Bridge and all of that, and everything was fine. And that night, I was supposed to do a talk for a UFO group in Sydney. And everything was fine until I got up there to do the talk, and then all of a sudden, jet lag hits. And I mean, it really wipes you out. It's so quick. And all I wanted to do was just lie down on the floor and go to sleep, which I couldn't do because I had a 3-hour lecture I had to give. So on that trip, I just went on remote control. You know, I've been doing these talks for so long, you can just go on automatic and like pushing a button on a tape recorder, and it was all coming out. But I really don't know how I did it, because I was totally wiped out, and it was totally automatic. And afterwards, all I wanted to do was find a bed. And of course, everybody wants to talk, and they want to sign books and all of these things. And you can't, I couldn't do it. So that time, I've learned since then to get in there and allow a couple of days, because you think you're okay, you think you're feeling fine, and then all of a sudden, bang, it'll really hit you and really wipe you out. So that's why this time I wanted to get in there with a couple of days to not do anything but just lay around and adjust. Now, on this trip, I took my daughter, Julia, with me, the one who works, she handles the office, and she does absolutely everything around here. We got other people in the office, but she's the backbone of the whole organization. So we knew she couldn't be gone for the whole trip, but she wanted to go, and we took her daughter, which is my granddaughter, Tiffany, who had never been over there. So we knew they could only do the New Zealand part of the trip, and then they were going to have to go back, because they couldn't be gone as long as I could. The other people in the office were saying, don't leave us, don't leave us. We can't handle this all by yourself, not for that long. So we went into Auckland and just enjoyed relaxing there until we had to go and start work. But after Auckland, I went to Wellington. And that was where we had the first lectures. And there's a man there that I've met him when I was over there before. Oh, 5 years ago I met this man. And I wanted to meet him again. And he kept saying, will you come back? We'll work up a lecture. And I could do it with him. Now, this name is Blair Styra. And he's very famous in New Zealand and parts of Australia, and I think his fame is spreading to other parts of that area, too. A Blair Styra, and he's a channel and a psychic, but I've never met anybody as accurate as him. Now, I know many psychics, and many of them are my friends, so I know the real ones. A lot of people keep telling me, do you know anyone who is real? I know several of them that are real. I don't care what the skeptics say, that there is no one who is a real psychic. I know many that are really right on. They know what they're doing. And I've had some of them on my show. But Blair, he channels, but he channels an entity called Tabash. Everyone in that area know Tabash, and they all have had sessions with Blair where he channels Tabash. And it's really a wonderful, enjoyable thing to watch him work. He does many, many private sessions in the Wellington area and all over New Zealand and into Australia. But he once a month he will have an open talk where he has people come. And that's where he wanted to do it with me this time. And we had an open lecture. And the auditorium was completely packed. He draws a crowd anyway, and this time it was overdoing it, and the place was completely packed. So he wanted me to do an hour lecture on the new books that are coming out, especially about the New Earth. That's what I'm lecturing on. Everywhere I go now, they want me to focus on the New Earth. So I was lecturing, going to do a lecture on the New Earth, and then Blair has Tabash come out. Now, when he does this, he goes into a trance, but then Tabash takes over his body, and he gets up and walks around, and is so joyful and funny, and he even sings, and it's really something to watch. It's really, he's an entertainer. But when he came on then, he was backing up all the things that I had said, and we worked really well together that night. Some people said later they thought it had been rehearsed, and I said, oh, no, it wasn't, because we didn't know what we were going to do. We were just going to wing it. So I did my talk, and then Tabash came out, and we worked together, and it was really very, very good, and the people enjoyed it. and they want me to come back and do it again, and he also wants to spread it over into Australia, which is probably going to happen because I spoke at many expos over there, and I told them about Blair, and they want him to come to that. So we're probably doing some more things together. But if anyone is interested in doing private sessions with Blair and Tavash, they can call our office, our email us, and we'll put you in touch with him because he does do private sessions. And I had one with him 5 years ago, and I had one with him on this trip. He is very, very accurate. He knows things that nobody else knows. He brought up things that only my family knew about me. So to me, it's proof that he's real. And he can do many, many wonderful things. So, if anybody's interested in contacting this young man, just call the office or email, and we'll put you in the information. I think I'm going to have him on my show because he said he'd be willing to come on once I get back and get my stuff back together here, because you won't believe the amount of work that's piled up. Then I'll call and ask him if he'll come on and do one a show one night. It'd be good if we could do it in advance, then people could call in, they could ask questions, and he could give them advice. So that's something I'm still working on. But anyway, I did that in Wellington, and then I had a class. Because I'm giving my hypnosis classes now all over the world, everywhere I go. And we had one in Wellington, and we drew, this is one of the biggest classes that I've had, and we had them coming from as far away as Singapore and Malaysia to take the class. Of course, over there, that's not as far as it would be to come here to the States. We did a really good class over there, and one of the problems was, though, but I always record the class. But when I'm traveling like that, my daughter wants me to use this new digital recorder. Now, even if I was doing the tape recorder before, it would have had the same problem, because you can only take so many things with you. We had to have a lot of things duplicated along the way because I was gone for 2 months, and I did 4 classes. I ended up teaching on this trip over 120 people that will be listed on my website as available. If they want to practice, they'll be available for private sessions because they have now taken my class to learn my method. About 120 people in the Australia, New Zealand, Malaysia, Singapore, in that area. So the things are spreading anyway. But the problem is trying to carry all these things with you with your suitcases. So we had to have the booklets that I give out and the CDs that are included in the classes, all that had to be duplicated over there. And we record the classes. And those that are in the class can order that. So we had to do it with the CDs, digital. Now, the problem is you have to come back and dump that into the computer. You can't just keep adding to a CD. There's digital. There's just so much that it'll hold. So she had to bring it back and dump it in the computer and make the CDs. So the rest of the trip, all I could do was say I would give them all copies of the New Zealand Wellington class, because otherwise it was just too much to do on the whole trip. I guess unless it would have had about 4 or 5 digitals. There's an answer out there somewhere. With all this new electronics, things just get more and more complicated. I'm so used to the tape recorders, and that's what I really rely on. And of course, you know that tape recorders are being phased out. They say they're not going to sell them anymore, and I buy my tapes in bulk, and they say, well, we'll continue to sell them to you as long as we can get them. So those are going to be phased out too. So it's like everything is changing and it's changing too fast. I just prefer the tape recorders because I can control them. I can transcribe from them. It's a whole lot easier than these new methods. Also, I found out, too, you know, I like the 35-millimeter cameras. I don't like these new digital ones. We've tried to reproduce some of the pictures from the digital, and there's too many pixels, I guess it is, in there, and the pictures are not clear, they're not that good. I still prefer the old 35-millimeter. Well, they're not selling the cameras, and it's not going to be very much longer. We're not going to be able to get the film. So they're trying to push us into this new technology, into the new world, I guess. And I guess I'm going to go kicking and screaming because there's a lot of things I don't really want to give up. But what are you going to do? The kids keep saying, Mama, you got to come into the new century. Yeah, but there's some things I still like to hang on to. So anyway, I did the class in Wellington. It was very well accepted. And we had, like I said, the biggest one that I've done anywhere in the world was right there. And after that, I have some very, very dear friends in New Zealand that helped arrange the whole trip. They are such wonderful people. They come over here to the States occasionally, and we see them here also. But while we were there, they said they knew my schedule in Australia was going to be very hectic. So they said, before you go, let's spend the next 2 weeks just doing sightseeing and taking a little vacation before you go over there. And that's very rare for me to be able to do that, to not have anything to do. So after we left Wellington, we went to Christchurch, where they live. And they have the North Island and the South Island. But getting out of Wellington is something else. I had no idea. And they said, it's the winds there. You have to fly out of Wellington to go south to go across the channel to get into the South Island. And the winds are so horrific. And I asked them later, was it just that day? And they said, oh, no, the winds are always like that. It's always a very difficult city to fly out of. So we just had this really rough ride, even trying to get up into the sky to get down to Christchurch. Then in Christchurch, our friends took us everywhere down in that area for a week before going to Queenstown. they always ask me, what's your favorite place in the world to go to? Because I've been to so many places. If somebody was going to take a vacation, they say, what would you recommend? I always recommend New Zealand. It is so beautiful there. No pollution, none at all, and very little population. It's like the rest of the world hasn't discovered it yet or caught up with it. There wasn't even any, I guess you would call what, Europeans, Westerners. There were just natives there, the Maoris, until the 1800s when they had the gold rush, the same gold rush that affected the United States. Then people began moving in there in the 1980s. So it really hasn't had that many people all these years. But it's a beautiful place. The air is so pure and so clear. One man said, you feel like you want to bottle it and take it home with you because it is so wonderful. The sky on the South Island is a blue that I've never seen anywhere else in the world. It is so clear and so pure that it is a beautiful blue, and there's no pollution at all. And I think I got it figured out because it's so close to Antarctica. You know, Antarctica is just to the south of New Zealand. And I think what we're doing there is getting the air as it moves from Antarctica. And New Zealand is the first land that it hits as it goes that way, so it hasn't had a chance to become polluted yet. That's my theory, anyway, as to why the air is so pure and why the sky is so blue. Because it hasn't, there's nothing in between, no cities or nothing to make pollution as it went from one place to the other. That's just what I'm thinking, anyway. You may not agree, but that's my theory of the of what it's like down there. It's lush and beautiful. Auckland, when we were in Auckland, Auckland is built on, I think it's over 100 volcanoes. And they just discovered a new one while we were there. Some of these volcanoes are active, but still the people there don't think anything of it, and they just go about their business. But there's always a chance that there will be an eruption one of these days. But the whole city of Auckland is built on volcanoes. And you get down into the South Island, it's snow-capped mountains and glaciers, and it's just extremely beautiful. Lush, wood, you know, trees and beautiful, beautiful flowers. And one thing my friends told us, they kept telling us, this is paradise. Now, you know, in Australia, they have the most poisonous things in the world, the most poisonous animals, insects, flowers, anything in Australia. They're the most poisonous in the world. And here, just not too far away in New Zealand, there is nothing that is poison. Absolutely nothing. My friends told me there is no poisonous animals, there's no poisonous snakes, no poisonous insects, no poisonous plants. Nothing there is poison at all. Because my friend kept saying, well, I told you it was paradise. And what a contradiction to have the most poisonous things in the world in Australia than in New Zealand have absolutely nothing that is poison. I think it's quite remarkable. Because I'm always, when I go into places where there's trees and flowers and bushes, I'm always thinking about snakes and, you know, we have the ticks and the spiders and all of that. No, they said, don't worry about it. There's nothing there that can hurt you at all. So anyway, we spent a week there in Christchurch, and it is beautiful with the glaciers and the mountains and the beautiful air. Then we went down to Queenstown. Now, some of you people out there have probably heard that Queenstown is called the adventure capital of the world. People come there from everywhere, the young ones especially, because there's so much to do there that you can't do anywhere else. It's all kind of crammed into one place. Now, it doesn't appeal to me, and it didn't appeal to my granddaughter either. She's 23, and she said, no, I'm not going to do that. But, like, they had the bungee jumping off the bridges, and I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And if you wanted to, you could take a plane and go fly up over the glaciers. And I'm not too keen on the little planes. And they did have some things that my daughter and granddaughter went on, though, but I stayed back at the hotel. They went on the boats, the little boats that go down the rapids. And they really enjoyed that. That's the part of the adventure, things is riding the rapids. And then they had the cable cars that took them all the way up to the top of the mountain. So I said, you go ahead and do those things. That's not what I want to do. But the one part that I did like was going on this boat that was out in the lake. Now, there's a big lake right there at Queenstown that is so beautiful. It is fed by the melting glaciers. And they have the cleanest water in the world. It's the purest water and the cleanest water in the world. It's right there at Queenstown. As well as the clearest air, the water is extremely pure. And the lake is fed from the glaciers. And that's why they have a lot of water sports. They have the water skiing and the parasailing. Everything that anybody who's interested in adventure really would like Queenstown. And it's a very quaint little town that just everybody comes so they can do absolutely anything there. You want to go up in the mountains, there's a whole lot of other things that don't appeal to me, but they might appeal to the rest of you out there that are a little off my what I want to do. They have places where you drive up that hill, you have to go 5 or 6 miles before you can even find a place to turn around with drop-offs on the side. And I said, nope, I'll stay down here. I don't want to do that. You might think I'm a killjoy, but that's, I've just gone past the need to have adventure like things like that. I don't like kites where you got to look down and there's nothing off the side of the road. It's just a sheer drop-off. That doesn't appeal to me. So anyway, Queenstown is very beautiful. We got to go on the boat, went all the way around the lake. So that was really nice. And we're getting ready to leave Queenstown because my daughter and granddaughter had to come back to the States because she's got to come back to work and my granddaughter had to go back to college. And I was going on to start the trip for Australia. So the night before we were going to leave, we had an earthquake in Queenstown. Now, there was an article in the paper that day talking about how the people there have been expecting the big one for a long time, and they see thinking it's going to hit any time. Of course, you know, when I go to California, you hear the same thing. We're all looking for the big one. But they learned to live with it. So we just thought, well, it's interesting that Queenstown is the place where they're looking for the for earthquakes. Well, that night, in the middle of the night, they said it was 7 point something on the Richter scale, but all I know is that I woke up in the middle of the night and the bed was shaking. And I kept thinking, I felt like somebody standing on the other side of the bed, bumping the bed back and forth with their legs or something. And I kept thinking, there's nobody in bed with me. Who's moving the bed? And I kept trying to go back to sleep, and then the bed would keep moving. And I said, well, there's nobody in here. Who's doing this? And then finally it came into my mind, oh, we're having an earthquake. And then I just rolled over and went back to sleep. I wasn't scared at all. And the next morning, my daughter was talking about it, and she said in her bedroom it woke them up, and they got up, but otherwise they weren't that scared, so we must have slept through the most worst part of it. Well, the next morning then, I went to the airport to leave, and while we're in the airport, another one hit. Now, this one was very noticeable because you're awake. And the entire building was moving, the floor was moving, the walls were moving. And they said later it was 6 point something, and it was an aftershock from the one the night before. So the one the night before was worse, but we just slept through it. But even when we were having the one in the airport, I just kept thinking, this is interesting, and I wasn't scared. I think that's a little, you might think it's unusual, but I guess it just, I knew we weren't in any danger anyway. But then I got on the plane and got out of there, and I said, well, if you're going to have some more earthquakes, you can do it with me gone anyway. My daughter flew back to the States, and I went on to Melbourne. And I've got Patricia Hamilton, who I've had on my show. She is the publisher of the Conscious Living magazine in Australia. She's based in Perth. And she's the one who set up my entire trip to Australia. She arranged all of my classes and all of my talks and my talks with the different expos along the way. She set the whole thing up. So I went on to Melbourne, and in Melbourne, I had my class there. I had lectures, and I did a class there. And I was there for about a week on all these different places. I'm seeing private clients, too. Then I went from Melbourne. I had to go to Perth, which is on the other side of Australia. People in Australia were saying, we consider Perth to be almost be another country. It's so far away. But you probably know Perth is the most isolated city in the world. It is all the way on the other side of Australia. There's nothing in between but desert. But it is a beautiful city, but it is just all cut off from the rest of Australia. So I flew to Perth, and I've been to these places before, but here, this time I was in Perth for 2 weeks, and they gave me an apartment there, which worked out real nice because I could have a little more room. And I did lectures. I did a class in Perth, which was another big class. I've had the biggest classes now that I've done anywhere have been on this trip. We drew a good, really good. There was a really good group of people at all of my classes. So I think if somebody on the other line just picked it up, don't pay any attention to it. They know I'm doing a show. It's not anything with Don. I think it has to do with our line. Okay. But anyway... that's what I'm trying to do anyway, is train people all over the world, because I can't do all the people who want sessions. It's absolutely impossible for me to see all these people. So the only solution is to teach other people my technique so that they can work with people. Because even on this trip, we had miraculous healings happening at the private sessions, and even at the demonstrations that I give for the class, we had miraculous healings taking place, and everyone was able to watch. And to me, this is what it's all about. The therapy is very important, helping the person with their problems, but also, to me, one of the main things is to help them with their illnesses, physical problems, and to see what the mind can do when people realize they can heal their own bodies, to find out why did they make themselves sick? Why did they do this to themselves? When we find this out with the sessions, it's absolutely miraculous to watch what happens to their bodies. And this was happening all in every city I went to when we were doing the private sessions, but especially when we were doing the demonstrations in the class, they could see the person actually be healed and walk out of there with no problem. So I did the class in Perth, and I had lectures, and I spoke at the Conscious Living Expo. I've done this many times before. Patricia's main thing is putting on her expo every year in Perth. So I spoke at, did two talks at the expo, and she said they had the biggest crowds that they've ever had for a lecture in the history of the expo. And I said, well, you mean you've been doing this for over 20 years and you've never had more people than that? She said, no. They didn't even know if they could get them all into the room that I was speaking in. They were just crowding in. And it was packed. And it was wonderful because they really enjoyed the lectures and what I was trying to present with my work. So I did that, and I had private sessions. Then I had to go to Sydney, and there I was going to be at the Mind, Body, Spirit Expo in Sydney. But I was also doing lectures and doing my classes there, too. So I was really busy. That's what I said. There was hardly a day off in all of the time I was there. I was doing good if I had any time off at all, because I was seeing clients, doing lectures, doing the classes. And I was really getting ready to come home, because when I'm gone about a month or 6 weeks, that's enough. And this was dragging into 2 months. But they said it was the only way they were going to be able to work in the entire continent, the whole of Australia, into one trip. So I did a whole lot of work in Sydney also. And here again, we were having miraculous healings take place. Now, you've got to remember, when I'm talking about this, I am not doing it. It's not me. It's this part that I work with. And I've mentioned this many times on the show. It's what I call the subconscious. And I can this technique that I've developed, you can contact that part and work directly with it. And that part has such power, it will work through anybody that I do a session with. And that's what I'm training the others how to do, is to contact this part. I call it the subconscious, but it is not the subconscious that the psychiatrists refer to. That is a simple part of the mind. This, if you want to define it, is the higher self, the higher consciousness, the higher oversoul. That's the part we're able to contact. And when you contact that part and have a conversation with it, it will explain why the person has the problem they have, gets them to look at it, and it takes it away, if it is appropriate. Because you know there are some people, they don't want to get well. They say, I don't want to be sick. Yeah, but some people, their illness is their identity. You take it away, they don't have anything. So it all depends on the person. Even Jesus knew that. He couldn't heal people if it was not a time for them to be healed. He could make them take away the pain. He can make them feel better. But if he saw it was their karma to experience what they were experiencing, he couldn't do anything about it either. So that's the same thing. If it's a person, if it's appropriate and it's time, and they want to release it, and they want to go on with their life and set it another direction, it can happen. And we had it happen in Sydney with a young man who was only 30 years old who they were getting ready to operate on him, on his back. And so he was able, through this part that I work with, they're the ones that do it. I call them they. I don't do anything. I'm the facilitator to put the person in touch with that. And they put him in touch with that, and he walked out of there. No, he's not going to have any operation. This happened many times on this trip. So the people taking the class were able to see the power here that they can work with. And it is wonderful. It is extremely powerful. You can do great things with this once you understand how to do it. But anyway, then when I was finished in Sydney, I was really ready to come home because I'd already been gone for 2 months. And when did I come back? I guess it was the end of November, and I'd left the end of September. Well, I got back here in time for Thanksgiving anyway. So I came back then, and I stopped off in Tahiti again on the way back just so I could have a good night's sleep. I flew to Auckland and then on to Tahiti, spent the night, and then I came on home. And I really did feel like I was upside down when I got back to the States. And I knew I was only going to be here for a few days. It was just going to be enough to take me through Thanksgiving, because I had to go on a cruise right after Thanksgiving, the Saturday. And people say, oh, you poor thing, you had to go on a cruise. But, you know, by this time I thought, well, maybe if I get on the cruise, I can relax and not have to work. It was a week-long cruise to the Caribbean with a Carnival cruise line. And I knew I'd have to work on it because that's why I was going. I was going to be doing lectures and workshops. So I was only home for a few days, got through Thanksgiving, so it was not really downtime. Oh, but when I came into the house after I got back from Australia, I'm coming in the house, and there was a funny smell. And I kept thinking, well, just because the house has been closed up, it smells musty. But then I noticed the water wasn't working right. So I've been checking around, and I found my water heater, there was a leak on the pipe coming in the top of the water heater. It had been dripping, apparently, the whole 2 months I was gone. So it had completely flooded the downstairs bedroom that was right next to the water heater, gone under the wall and completely flooded the whole downstairs. The rug was completely soaked. There was stuff growing on the rug. I'd never seen anything like that. It was not mushroom. They were big. It was kind of a big fungus, I guess you would say, but looked like, kind of like a mushroom, crossed between a mushroom and a fungus. And it was growing on the carpet. And the mold had already started up the walls, and it was into the paneling and the sheetrock. So, I mean, the room was just completely destroyed. So, this is what I come home to. So, I got on the phone the next day, tried to get a plumber out here to at least fix the leak. And we're building a new warehouse for my company, so we had carpenters here, and they went in and ripped out the carpet and started tearing things off the wall, but I'm going to have to replace everything in that room. And that was just, I said, well, I got to turn around and leave again, so that's all we could do was at least take the wet carpet and throw it out in the front yard, because I've got to go on this cruise. So I left with the house all torn apart. That was a bedroom I don't use, and my daughter, my granddaughter Tiffany, had a lot of her stuff from college stored in there. And of course, the boxes, the water just went right through everything. And so there's a lot of her stuff that's going to have to be thrown away. But anyway, we get through that, and we go on the cruise, and I figured, well, I'm finally going to be able to enjoy myself. And it was really nice. We had a cabin that had, this year again, it was me, my daughter Julia, and Tiffany, my granddaughter. I've got a lot of, a huge, huge family, but this seemed to be the ones that travel with me most of the time. So we went on the cruise. We had a nice cabin that had an outdoor window so we could see out at the ocean. And I had lectures. We had about 45 people who had signed up to come on the cruise to do the lectures, you know, as well as have a vacation to do the lectures and the workshops. So that was really nice. And we, but my daughter got seasick. My granddaughter didn't feel too well, and I didn't get sick at all. I guess it's because when I got something to do, I can't get sick. I've got obligations that I have to take care of. But we had lectures and the workshops, and it was really a wonderful time. We went to Puerto Rico, and then we went to St. Thomas, and then to St. Martin. So I was trying to get Christmas presents on this trip, so I got some in Australia. So that was the main thing I was trying to do, so I could get out of there and, you know, do this when I get back. So I just got back Sunday night. Yeah, I get back in the States again. We get back home, and I still haven't gone through my stuff. I've got tons of mail, snail mail, and I haven't even yet got a chance to go through this whole pile of emails. I've got all this work I've got to do, and I haven't even begun to touch it. So I was only home, been home a few days. But I walked back in the house. I got here off the plane from the cruise from Miami at midnight. And I come in and I'm thinking, this house is awful cold. I turn my heat down when I'm gone, but it's cold. And I couldn't get the furnace to come back on. So I can't do anything about it at midnight. So I just went to bed. And while I was gone, temperature had really dropped. It was down in the 20s. So those of you who live in the north can appreciate this. So I walked in, and the house is all cold, no heat. So the only thing I could do was go to bed, pile on the blankets, and figure my body heat maybe would kick in and keep me warm the rest of the night. That's all I could do. So the next morning, I told my daughter, I said, before I call anybody, the first thing they're going to want to know, is there any gas in the gas tank? We use butane. So we went out and checked on that, and there wasn't any. It was completely empty. But, you know, when I left in September, it was hot. I come back the first part of December, and here it is. We're in the middle of winter. I didn't even thought to check on the gas tank. So we had to get somebody out here, and it was 2 days before they could come out and fill my gas tank. So I've got fireplaces. We brought in the wood and started heating the fireplaces. So anyway, now it's been a couple of days. I think things are back to normal. I've got a torn-up bedroom that's got to be replaced, but at least I've got heat, and I'm back here now. You know, I think it's kind of like when I always say, a house is like your body. It's the equivalent of your body. You're living in the house. And it has all the things that your body has. When I built this house myself, and we know saw how you're putting up the skeleton, the framework, and you put the roof on, you put the other walls up. It's building a body, really. And you have the water and everything coming in, and then you have the sewer system, takes off the waste. It's really like a body. And I've noticed that as soon as there's nobody in a house, it seems to begin to deteriorate. It begins to go. Just like the human body. You know, when your human body, as when the spark of life leaves the human body, that's what keeps the body functioning. That spark of life is you, your soul. So as soon as that soul, that spark of life leaves the human body, the body begins to deteriorate. And it's gone. It begins to fall apart. So I've come to the same conclusion that there's nobody living in a house. Look how fast the house begins to fall apart. So this was what was happening. I thought I was only gone for 2 months, and already we got all these things happening to the house. I said, my house is beginning to fall apart because there was nobody living in it. Nobody home. So that's what happens. And that's my opinion anyway, that the whole thing is, it's very much like our house, our body, our own temple, our own body. The other house is the same way. All right, but now I'm back home again, and I start getting back to work. So by next week, I'm going to start giving metaphysical information again. I'll probably be having guests again. But I do want to say, everybody all over the world where I've gone, all want to know, when is the next book coming out? When is Convoluted 3 coming out? Everybody wants that book. Well, I took it with me. The rough manuscript, and it's almost finished. I spent the entire trip, every spare moment I had, editing. People say, did you take your computer? No, I took the hard copy, and I was doing the editing on that so that when I came back, I knew I'd be able to enter it into the computer, and then we'd be ready to go to press. So I spent the entire trip editing and doing the final parts of it so we can get it to the printers. While I was gone, my office came out. They were mailing flyers out to everybody, and they put it on our website. We're doing a pre-publication special. We're not even sure the price of the book, but we're selling it. I think it's only for $14. But it's a pre-publication special, and it's going to be as big as the other two convoluted books. But if anybody is interested in this, when I came back, the orders have been pouring in every day. The telephone won't quit ringing. And this is good. That means I have to produce. I have to get this finished so we can go to the printers. So I'm doing the final corrections and completion, and my daughter is now putting it into book form. But we are doing a pre-publication special. If anybody is interested in ordering Convoluted 3, before it comes out, you can get in on this, and you'll have your copy as soon as it comes off the press. So if you want to check my website, it's www.ozarkmountain, name of my company, Ozark Mountain Publishing. It's abbreviated, OZARKMT.com. Or for those of you in other parts of the world, it's OZARKMT.com. And my 800 number, if you want to call in, is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. If you're interested in this pre-publication special. Also, people are signing up for my next classes. I'm going to be having classes all over the United States starting in February, and then I'll be going out of the country again. I have others in other parts of the world. If you want to check on that, check my website, OzarkMountain.com, and look under schedules, and it'll show you where I'm going to be and where the classes are going to be all over the world. And I'm having one here in Arkansas in March. I'm going to be giving one at the University of New Mexico in Santa Fe in April. And they said that will count as a full college credit for anyone who wants to take that class there. So if anybody's interested in these things, check my website, OzarkMountain.com, or call our 800 number, 1-800-935-0045. So now I'm back, and I think everything's getting back to normal, because now I'm back on the air again. No more archives for a while. So I want to say goodnight to everybody, and I hope everybody's out there getting ready for Christmas. I'm still in a time warp. So goodnight, everybody.